Hey everyone, this is Scott Spinelli and you are listening to I'm Sure I'm Overthinking This, Episode 6. This week's guest is John Rothstein, college basketball insider for CBS Sports. John and I met at ESPN Radio. I was an intern there. He was on the air in a number of different capacities. And what I've always respected about John is that throughout the years, we've stayed in general contact. And he obviously, you know, it's not like we're great friends or anything, but he has always remained friendly, helpful. Whenever I needed something, he would always get right back to me. And as I detailed with Meredith Goldstein in the previous week, you know, that's something that not everybody does. And I have always appreciated John for that. And I thought he'd be great to have on this week because he's a guy who is extremely hardworking and has really turned himself into something fantastic. And I obviously am excited to see where else he can go from here because I don't think that he's even close to done with what he wants to accomplish. So get ready for an interview with a guy who is, like I've said to other people off this air, one of the most hardworking people I've ever met and almost impossible to outwork. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with John Rothstein. It seems to me every single day on Twitter, obviously, you are one of the hardest guys to outwork. And obviously, you start with the stay hungry, stay humble tweet. We'll start from there. Where does that come from? Why that quote?
I just keep a running log, to be honest with you, Scott, of things that I hear that I feel like resonate. And probably 10 years ago, I was a young reporter and I was covering a team. And, you know, somebody asked, you know, the coach that I was covering at the time, you know, what's it going to take for your team to maintain a certain level of success throughout the rest of the year? And he said, we just have to stay hungry and stay humble and keep doing what we're doing. So I wrote it down that day, and it's been something I've tried to emulate and recite every day since.
And also with all the historical quotes, I've noticed you used a lot of JFK, little John F. Kennedy action in there a bit. Is that something, where does that come from? And especially also, are you a big historical guy, or is that just something to keep you motivated?
Well, I think, you know, we're all kind of in our own little bubble when we're in a vocation that is so, you know, geared towards one thing, especially if you're trying to carve out a niche. And I think as you get older and you have more time, you realize the importance of balance in life, and you realize the importance of, you know, even though you're devoting so much time and energy into your craft, that you have to have other things in life that give you a release. And one thing I've really tried to do the past couple of years is study the minds of successful people in our history. And obviously John F. Kennedy is one of those people. And I would say that especially now as we move forward into the off season, now that college basketball is over, that's definitely a person that I have grown to love studying in terms of what he's done, you know, for our country, in terms of all the things that he's had to do to, you know, make a mark in our country before he was assassinated. And in terms of studying his philosophies and how he was able to navigate, you know, so many difficult things during, you know, his tenure, not just as president, but also in the Senate and his time in the House of Representatives. So, you know, President Kennedy has definitely had a significant impact on me. And I think, you know, the one thing that you kind of realize when you study the minds of successful people, regardless of what they're doing, whether it's in sport or music or politics, is the greatest thing that resonates and that is similar with all people who do great leadership is unselfishness. And I think that's something that you try to, you know, kind of remind yourself of every day, that even though you're going towards your own personal goals and trying to get your own personal satisfaction, the greatest impact you can have is when you obviously impact somebody else in a positive way.
You mentioned balance before, and I find it interesting because it doesn't seem like, I mean, I just from my cursory look at it, you tweet and are active on Twitter more than just about any of the other insiders I know, whether it's basketball, baseball, pro level, college level. You're extremely active. So, and even in setting this up today, you know, obviously you're a very busy guy. There's no real time where, I mean, you're doing me the favor, obviously. I wonder, what is the event in your life where, outside of the obvious, you know, like really sad or really glorious wedding, funeral type thing, what is the event where John Rothstein says, you know what? No, this comes first. What is that?
No, there is no event, Scott. 365 days a year, 7 days a week. This is what I do. And, you know, I think, you know, the one thing that, you know, I've kind of learned is that, you know, if you're really good at anything, you're going to be dialed in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, you know, I think, you know, the people that are in your circle understand that and they're used to it. But, for people that obviously live a normal life, they have a hard time understanding why, you know, you're always going to be hanging on your BlackBerry, or why you might have to step outside if you're out at happy hour with friends because somebody is transferring and there's an assistant coach leaving. But, you know, Hyman Roth told Michael Corleone in The Godfather Part II that this is the business he's chosen. And in a lot of ways, this is the business I've chosen. You know, the one thing that I look at is, you know, college basketball now is a 365-day-a-year type sport, and there's always news. But at the same time, you know, I'm not somebody who's going to, you know, make a point to watch, you know, NFL Sunday football for 7 hours or have season tickets to the Mets. So, you know, things balance out over time, and obviously there's certain times of the year, like March or like, you know, basketball season where things intensify. But, you know, you kind of, I think, have to make a commitment to being at your very best, and that requires you to always be attentive.
How did college basketball become the thing? Because I know you've covered other sports. Did you play ball in school?
No, not very well. I mean, full disclosure, I was the sixth man of the year in the Ithaca College Intramural League, and it was the B division, and there's only six guys on a team. So, you know, when you say you got to know your strengths, you know, mine was definitely with a microphone and not with a jump shot. But, you know, I mean, you know, when I, you know, met you and I was working, you know, in radio, I think the thing that you kind of really see right away is that, you know, in order to really separate yourself in this business, you know, you really, really need to have a niche. And I had a niche, you know, just because of some of the freelance work I was doing, you know, in the college basketball world before I started at ESPN Radio and at MSU Network. We're going back, you know, almost 10 years ago right now. And, you know, I kind of saw maybe some more upward mobility in that route. And that was always my passion. That was always something, you know, that I always kind of had the greatest interest in. And, you know, when you really look at, you know, what, you know, you had to do to get to a certain point where you had more credibility, I thought that I would have a chance to potentially grow into a greater role in that. And I felt like, you know, I could obviously make a living, you know, doing talk radio, and I had some good opportunities, you know, to do that in New York. And I had some opportunities outside of New York that I chose not to pursue, and some didn't pursue me. But I'm very blessed and very fortunate for the way things have, you know, turned out, and then I'm obviously affiliated with the strongest brand in college basketball and CBS Sports.
You started in print journalism, is that not correct? Obviously, before you got really, really going?
That is correct.
And so, obviously, coming out of Ithaca, you're from New York, you wanted to stay local. How were you able to? Because that is such a difficult thing for a lot of people coming out of school. They realize, wait a minute, oh man, I don't want to have to go work in Madison or Charlotte or, you know, some random town in Kansas. I really would like to stay local, but it's difficult, obviously, if you grow up in the number one media market in the country. How were you able to do that?
Well, I had some professional experience before I graduated college. You know, I had a portfolio and I had bylines, you know, from different, you know, weekly and daily papers, both in Westchester County and when I was at school in Ithaca. You know, I was a freelance reporter for the Ithaca Journal, and then I interned 2 years for the YES Network in New York. This was in 2002 and 2003, and I, you know, was fortunate enough that my editor there at the time kind of allowed me to kind of cover and anchor their NBA draft coverage. So I was 20 years old, and I was, you know, pitching him on letting me do mock drafts and write features. So
oh, wow.
I had all that. And then, you know, that was kind of obviously, you know, my greatest, I thought, you know, thing I had going when I came out of college, that I had a professional portfolio. But then I entered, you know, ESPN Radio's dream job, and I think that was August of 2004, and I was fortunate enough to get that opportunity full-time, and, you know, I kind of was on the air in New York, you know, with the months following that, but then I also saw that I needed to make money and I needed to live, so in addition to doing some freelance work for ESPN Radio, I started working in, you know, private real estate work, you know, doing work for a friend's, you know, brother, you know, making cold calls and trying to, you know, learn that as well, just because I had to make a living and pay the bills. And with some of the money I made from working in the real estate world, you know, I bought airtime on a station in Westchester County called WVOX Radio for a half an hour a week, so at least I had a demo. So I was juggling that, and then at the same time, I got a job, you know, covering college basketball freelance for FoxSports.com, and, you know, I was kind of working four jobs, and I was, you know, at the same time trying to be, you know, young and single and live in New York. So it was a pretty exciting time. It was a pretty, you know, crazy time as well. And then after a year of doing all that, I was up for Morning Drive in Philadelphia. I went down and did a couple of shows down there and auditioned, and I didn't get that opportunity. And then I was up for a job at WGN Radio in Chicago. I didn't get that opportunity. Then I had a meeting at ESPN Radio in Boston to do updates up there. I didn't get that opportunity. And fortunately enough, ESPN Radio in New York asked me back in the fall of 06 to do updates full-time on the weekend, and I was continuing to do my college basketball stuff on the side. And then 6 months later, I got an audition to do some NCAA tournament work on TV for MSG Network, and that allowed me to obviously get, you know, like a consistent television platform for the first time.
You mentioned earlier, very casually, but for people who don't know, explain a little bit about what you mean by you bought radio time, because I don't think people really, I mean, I know what you mean, but I don't know if people really understand how literal that is, that you actually did buy time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, people think, you know, well, you should go to stations and ask for airtime and you can do this or you can do that. And you know, the people who just say that are living in a dream world and they're naive. I mean, radio airtime, you know, is incredibly expensive, especially when you get into some of the bigger markets. So I looked up, you know, small stations from where I was living, you know, in terms of closeness and proximity, and one of the stations was WVOX in New Rochelle, and, you know, I mean, I think, you know, for about an hour of airtime, it was probably, you know, I'm just guessing right now, it would be $800 to $1,000 an hour to get on the air. So I did a half an hour show, and I tried to sell advertising and stuff like that and try to get as much support as I could, because I was trying to build a brand. I was trying to get a demo, and I knew I wasn't going to get anywhere and have a chance to leave New York and get on the air if I didn't have that. And in a lot of ways, you know, that I really look at as being the backbone of, you know, my career, just because you kind of force yourself to be uncomfortable. You force yourself to be in a situation where you're constantly working, you're doing things you don't want to do, but in the long run, it's one of the best things I've ever done, because, you know, it's interesting, Scott, you know, you go through certain situations and you kind of always look at things through a different lens depending on the time in your life in which you're currently in. And I remember being envious when I was at Ithaca College of, you know, people whose parents had connections or whose people, you know, whose parents were able to, you know, send their kids on spring break. And, you know, quite, you know, candidly, I was pretty envious because I saw people were maybe going to get, you know, an opportunity that I wasn't going to get because of who their father knew or who their uncle knew. And I think, you know, kind of going through that and that kind of having to force yourself to go to, you know, means and go to, you know, situations where you didn't think you were going to be able to kind of manage everything at the same time. You know, I think the good thing when you go through something like that is you kind of learn, look, you know, if you get where you want to get, you'll have earned it, and if you don't get it, you'll manage. You don't have to live up to anybody else's expectations except your own, and you probably don't really appreciate that as much as 20 as you do as 30, but I'm really grateful right now that I didn't have, you know, kind of somebody making a call for me now that, you know, things are the way they are.
Obviously, being where they are is a pretty successful spot for you right now, and I don't doubt that you ever went through what I'm about to ask you, but just in case, you mentioned a few of the jobs that you didn't get. Was there ever a point where you sort of doubted, maybe this isn't for me, maybe I need to do something different? Because like you said, and I'm glad that you mentioned it, there were a bunch of rejections along the way. I think a lot of people, this happens in all walks, you know, when the first time you hear somebody and they're relatively young, you think, oh, wow, he made it pretty easily. And they don't even realize how much of a struggle you went through and how much hard work that there was to get to where you are, the rejections along the way. Did you ever, how much was there doubt that ever crept in? Or did you just say, you know what, the hell with this. This is what I'm going to do. And I'm just going to keep going until I get it.
Well, you know, there was a lot of days like that because there's so many other things that you can't really put into words. And what I mean by that is this is, you know, if I graduated college when I was 20, I finished the year early, I finished in 3 years. So I wanted to get started early. So you're 20 years old, then all of a sudden 20 becomes 21 and 21 becomes 22. And you still have no semblance of normalcy in your life. You're working all these odd hours. You know, you have friends who are moving to Manhattan and they're doing all the things that young professionals are doing in the city. And like, you know, you don't have that life and you want that life. You can't always meet them for happy hour because you're working, or you can't move into the city because it's not really feasible when you look at things because it doesn't align with the other aspects of your life. You're not stable enough to do something like that, because the truth of the matter is if you could do updates right now in Baltimore 5 days a week, you get in your car and start driving. So it's not just the professional rejection. You want to start your life and you want to start to kind of lay down your own roots, and you're not given that opportunity because, you know, the professional aspect of your life is still so much up in the air. So it was a really difficult time, but I remembered, you know, when I started to, you know, kind of have, you know, a couple of opportunities where I felt like things were trending in the right direction, how good you felt. And, you know, that's, I think, the thing that's very rewarding. You know, it's never a good thing, okay, you know, to be handed things right away. And, you know, at time, you know, kind of like progressed, I just really saw the value of having calluses along the way, because you can't get where you want to go in life without calluses.
You won ESPN 1050's Dream Job Competition, and
yep.
I wonder, was there any sort of, I don't know how the right way to phrase this, but was there any sort of resentment when you walked in and got the opportunity to do things that some of these other people you talked about had built calluses over, you know, the people that are working there, you know, that had been in radio for such a long time, then here comes this fresh-faced kid that, for all intents and purposes, didn't have the career in radio yet. Was there any resentment from anybody there? And, you know, I'm not asking for you to name names, in just terms of did you feel resentment, or was it sort of an open opportunity for you to grow?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sure there was resentment looking back on it. I mean, you know, I won Dream Job 4 days after I turned 21. So that, I mean, you don't realize it at the time, but that's how young you are. You know, I've always tried to act professionally and be respectful to anyone I'm working with, and always try to take the high road. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, for people who were wanted opportunities and were working behind the scenes, I'm sure there was resentment. But, you know, one thing I learned pretty quickly working in radio, you know, as a freelance reporter, was I wasn't going to be able to survive in the New York market by simply doing that. So I think once I started to work other jobs and, you know, work in a completely different field, doing, you know, private mortgage and real estate lending and things like that, and buying my own airtime, I think, you know, you obviously earn people's respect that way, because you're showing that you're willing to do whatever it takes. When you're willing to work holidays and work overnight shifts, that's when you start to gain respect, especially when you're trying to obviously support yourself and get your career going by working 6 or 7 days a week. So, you know, another quote that I love, I remember Coach said it in practice, don't talk, show. And we live in, you know, a day and age right now, and it's really, you know, I think it's sad, and it's really a reflection of our generation, where people want to show you, excuse me, people want to talk about everything because of, you know, different platforms and social media. Mm-hmm. There's Twitter, there's Instagram, and you'll notice this, like, everybody wants to take pictures that they're having such a good time, or they're going to retweet positive comments about themselves. And it's really, I think, a negative reflection of our society. Because the truth of the matter is, if you have to talk about it all the time, you're really not exuding those feelings. So I've always been somebody who's tried to pride myself and really thought it made more sense and you exuded more class if you worked the hardest and said the least. Let somebody else tell you how good you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like that, was that Goodfellas, where he goes, the quietest person in the room is normally the most important? I think that was Goodfellas. Right?
100%. And, you know, the truth of the matter, too, is, you know, people think, and this is just my read, but I've talked about this with some highly profile people that I've covered, like, people think that Twitter or Instagram is going to solve all their problems. When everybody goes home at night and they're getting ready to go to bed, it's still just going to be you. Happiness is always going to depend on yourself, not obviously what you're posting on social media or the message you're trying to get out by the pictures you take and posting them.
I couldn't agree with you more. I could probably spend 2 to 3 hours just unpacking that, but because we neither of us have the time for that, I guess we could move on a little bit. When was the first time, and you are a guy, like you said, who's had confidence in yourself, you know, and gone through your ups and downs, but in that period of the rejections, and then you're starting to do more and more work, you're getting more and more opportunities, when did you finally feel like, okay, you know what, it's starting to slow down a little bit for me? You know, but great basketball players talk about how the game slows down for them. When did you start to feel like, all right, I not only belong here, but I've got a real good chance of being good, being successful?
You know, I was able, because of my Rolodex, to get a couple of good, you know, interviews on WVOX. I remember I was chasing Billy Donovan for months after they won the national championship in 2006 to come on, and I got him to come on, and I felt like I had really had a strong interview. And I remember I was driving, you know, from the radio station that day, and I was stuck in traffic, and I remember, you know, you kind of had, you know, a life moment, and I was just looking up through my windshield, and I said, you know what, I'm getting pretty close. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'm getting pretty close. And probably less than a year later, I was able to, you know, get an opportunity on MSG Network to do some stuff for college basketball. And I look back on it now and how I was on air those first couple of nights, and I cringe, because, you know, you're always your own hardest critic. But probably, I would say, when I first, you know, started to get some reps at MSG and so on and so forth, and then I was fortunate enough to get on there full time the next fall, and obviously, you know, do stuff with their college basketball coverage, and then I was there from 2007 to 2010, and then I got a great opportunity at CBS during the 2010 NCAA tournament, and I've been there ever since.
Now that you're with CBS, you seem to be available on every platform they have, right? I mean, you're doing the writing, you're doing the online videos, you're doing the actual TV stuff. Is there anything that you prefer to do? If they said to you, listen, you got to only pick one, we're going to pay you the exact same, you're going to work just as hard, obviously, but you can only do one of these things, which is the one that you prefer to do the most?
You can't just do one thing, because that's not the way our business is set up right now. It's very important for me to write. It's very important for me to have, you know, the form where I can convey my thoughts, you know, in print. It's obviously very important to be visible in TV, especially, you know, during the month of March and during the actual regular season. And, you know, it's important right now that, you know, you obviously are able to do audio as well. You know, I'm fortunate enough that Compass Media and my boss there, Peter Kosan, you know, was able to support me last fall when we launched a podcast that I do every week of the year. And that's very important, too. And the more versatility that you have, the better off you're going to be long term in this business. So that's one thing, you know, that I'm constantly telling young professionals when I'm fortunate enough to go to colleges and go to universities and talk to them. And I am, you know, the one thing, you know, that I think people are doing right now is they're trying to limit what they want to do, or they're trying to obviously put, you know, kind of, you know, ceilings on what they want to do. And the truth of the matter is, I think it's important to understand that, you know, you're not going to be able to do everything and to be focused and strategic when you're trying to make your mark in this business. And I'm going to go back to another President Kennedy quote right now. Efforts and courage are not enough without purpose and direction. If you want to be a play-by-play guy, you've got to train yourself to be a play-by-play guy. If you want to be an information guy, you've got to go that route. So it's important, again, not just to try and throw a million things off the wall because, you know, not everything's going to stick.
Just to go to Kennedy real quick, are you interested at all in the assassination theories at all, or are you more just interested in him as a leader? Because I find some of the assassination stuff to be endlessly fascinating, the movies, the books, the TV shows and such.
No, all of it, man. I'm definitely a hardcore Camelot junkie. And in the times when, you know, I do get, you know, some blank pages during the spring and the summer, that's definitely something that I'm going to read about and learn about and study and always try and learn from, because again, you know, regardless of what you're pursuing, whether you want to be a musician that plays at Carnegie Hall, whether you want to be a broadcaster, whether you want to be somebody who's excelling in public service, and I go back to this, you know, you have to exude and you have to have the attributes of a great leader. And to me, you know, he is the greatest leader that we've had in our nation's history. It's just unfortunate that his time was cut too short.
A lot of the times have been talking about the niche, the importance of having a niche. Obviously, yours, you said you recognized early on you could do something in college basketball. But then you've also spoken about how it's important to do everything. So just to sort of tie that up together, I think what you're trying to say, right, is that the importance is to find something, focus on one, maybe an area of things that you want to do, but then never limit yourself as far as how you're going to go about it. Is that fair to say?
100%. 100%. Like, I'll give an example. Like, I think it was 3 years ago or 4 years ago, Adam Zucker, who, you know, hosts the SEC on CBS and, mm-hmm. you know, is a tremendous star in this business. I consider him one of my closest friends in life right now. His wife went into labor a day before, you know, CBS Sports Network was doing their NFL draft shows. And, you know, a second child was coming and CBS didn't really have a host to do the shows. And, you know, I mean, I covered the NFL when I was doing some talk radio, but, you know, CBS was in a bind and he called me from the hospital and said, look, do you think you could film and host these shows? And I said, well, do I have a day to prepare? And it was very rare for me to be doing football stuff, but I kind of knew just from working around talented people like him or people like Al Troutwig, who, you know, I worked with MSG, like, you know, you just kind of have to be able to be sharp enough to tee up people, know what they're talking about and get out of the way. And, you know, I did you know, some NFL draft shows as the host for a couple of days. And, you know, that's not a good career path in my opinion, because all of a sudden you're, you know, altering your niche. But I think, you know, it's important that you're ready, you know, if a situation like that in an emergency comes up.
I'd like to talk a little bit about Twitter. You are obviously very active on there. Who do you see as your audience on Twitter? Because you tweet about the widest variety of stuff. I mean, transfers to colleges I haven't even thought of in months. Assistant coaches coming and going. Who do you, I mean, is there a limit to your audience as far as Twitter is concerned?
Well, I mean, I think you want to provide content for the hardcore college basketball junkie and anybody else, obviously, who's, you know, interested in news or insight. And I've always tried to, you know, build, you know, a brand, you know, that reflects me, because so often we see people right now in society trying to be somebody else or trying to kind of be a spinoff of somebody that already exists. And the truth of the matter is there's only one of me, there's only one of you, there's only one of anybody. So you have to be the best version of you that can be, that you can be. And, you know, one thing, Scott, that I've kind of learned too, and I've been so fortunate and so blessed to spend so much time over the last, you know, 11, 12, 13 years over so many coaches, around so many coaches, and coaches, as you know, have their own, you know, philosophies and ideas on life and success. And, you know, one of the great blessings in my life has been, you know, being able to spend extended period of time around the guys who have been the last three head basketball coaches at UCLA, Steve Lavin, Ben Hallen, and Steve Alford. And I remember I was in Starkville, Mississippi, interviewing Coach Hallen this year for CBS, and he was just talking about, you know, being the head coach of UCLA and having to deal with Coach Wooden's shadow and how long that shadow was. And he really started to open up about how at the end of his tenure at UCLA, he didn't really heed Coach Wooden's advice. And Coach Wooden's advice was, the only thing we should focus on every single day is being the absolute best that we can be that day, and not putting limits on where you can go beyond that. And kind of what he meant was, if you just focus on that for that specific day and continue to do that every single day, everything else is going to take care of itself. Too often when I was younger, I think I would say to myself, well, I have to be here by here, or I have to be there by there. And I think, you know, once you get to a point where you can feel comfortable enough understanding where you are and understanding that, you know, regardless of if you get certain opportunities that you didn't think you were going to get, you know, it's not going to change you as a person. You think that when you have certain goals and aspirations in mind, you think that you're going to become a different person and, you know, all these other aspects of your life are going to be complete. And that's why I go back to what I was saying about, you know, what we're dealing with in our society with Twitter and Instagram. Like, happiness is always going to depend on yourself. And the chase is something in all of this that's very dangerous, because the chase can take you to a good place, the chase can take you to a bad place, but we're all chasing something every day. And, you know, I think it's important, too, when you take a deep breath once in a while, to ask yourself, what's the chase molding me? Am I still being a good friend of my friends? Am I still being a good, you know, son to my mother and my father? Like, what is my drive? What is my journey and my quest making me in relation to the people that are most important in your life?
Do you feel at times that you have let some of those people down based on your conviction and how much your job has become your life? You know, your the people that are very close to you, family, friends, girlfriends, you know, you said mother, father, etc.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that if somebody doesn't understand what you do, and if somebody doesn't really have, you know, a real grasp of what the day-to-day is, you know, they can't understand it. You know, I've had relationships that have suffered because people, like, you know, would be like, you know, in a room with me, we'd be hanging out and, you know, Tom Izzo would be calling. And, you know, the girl I was with at the time kind of said, like, well, you're not taking that now. And I just felt like saying, you know, he's been to six Final Fours. How many have you been to? I mean, like, what are you going to tell me? What are you going to tell me? I'm not going to take the call. Like, I mean, that's, unfortunately, you know, but you know, that's all part of living. And you don't learn, you don't understand that when you're, necessarily when you're 24 or 27 or even 29, but when you get old enough and you start to, you know, go through more and more experiences, you learn that people, you know, again, who aren't in this day-to-day are, you know, for lack of a better word, like civilians. I have a good friend who's an assistant coach of the program, and that's the term he uses. People don't understand the importance of, you know, getting tipped off about something and having to take a call, and if you can forward that story, what it means for you, or so on and so forth. So I've had, you know, many of those instances, but you know, you kind of learn that the people who are in your circle and the people who understand, you know, what you're doing, they get it. And I will tell you, in almost every social situation, if somebody isn't familiar with me, I tell them right out of the gate, look, I am not ignoring you. If I look at my phone, I just don't want to miss a news story.
Yeah, I mean, I've known you for, you know, on and off for a while now, and you've always struck me as one of the most committed guys. But that being said, not someone that is unaware, not someone that is buried in a phone. And I think that's an important distinction to make, because there are a lot of people that are simply just checking their phone just to see if they didn't miss anything. But it, like you said, it's sort of that fake persona that they provide on the internet, whereas you're doing your job. And in a way, it's similar to dating someone that doesn't find you funny, if being funny is important, or doesn't, you know, understand your interests, whether or not, you know, you both like to read and she doesn't like reading the same thing. You know, this is something you love. This is something you're passionate about. And if they can't understand that, be it a girlfriend or a friend of any kind, then maybe that person isn't as close to you or shouldn't be as close to you as you probably made them.
Well, no question. And again, like, it's not just something that I love and I obviously have an interest in. You know, it's my livelihood. And like, that's, you know, that's the point that I've kind of have made to people. It's like, look, you know, like, I don't have an inheritance. Like, I'm fighting, you know, every single day to continue to build. So that's something that obviously has to have the utmost attention. And another thing, too, which is very important for all young professionals to know, especially in broadcasting, do not get bent out of shape over things you can't control. Because in our lives, we always seem to worry about things, you know, that are really out of our control, whether somebody gets an assignment or somebody gets an opportunity. A lot of times, stuff like that has absolutely nothing to do with you, and you can't take it personally.
Well, what sort of stuff are we talking about, as an example?
You know, whether somebody gets a job or somebody gets an opportunity or, you know, this thing didn't work out because of that reason. It's just important to say to yourself, am I going to do every single day everything I can to put myself in the best possible position for success? And that's professionally, or that's in other situations. And if you do that, then you really can't, you know, lose sleep over anything at night. And I think that's something that it's important to really, really, you know, try to live by on a day-to-day routine. And I'll give you another example, and I'm so grateful that I had this opportunity, because it turned out to be, you know, the last time I was with him in a practice setting, before last college basketball season, not this past one, but the 14-15 season, I was in Madison for a practice. You know, the year that Wisconsin went to the title game and lost to Duke, they had Kaminsky and Decker and, you know, Trayvon Jackson and Nigel Hayes. And I was sitting with Bo Ryan after practice, and we were talking. And this is another quote. And I just said to him, like, you know, how has your program been so consistent, you know, just over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, because, you know, they always finished in the top four of the Big Ten. They had finally broken through and went to the Final Four the year before. And he just said, well, we have a saying around here, be really good every day at all the things that don't take talent. And to me, that's another thing that I've tried to live by. Every on-air appearance is not going to be as flawless as you want it to be. Some can be, but not all of them are going to be. But if you prepare, and if you put yourself in a situation to be the best that you can be, you'll live with the results. So that's another thing that I've always tried to be in a situation to emulate since that day in Madison, and I was fortunate to spend time with Bo Ryan.
When does it stop for you? I don't mean your career ending, but at a certain point, right, you know, you're in your mid-30s right now, correct?
I'd like to think lower 30s at this point, but, you know.
I find lower 30s.
It's interesting that way, though, you know. It's like Matthew Broderick said in Ferris Bueller, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop looking around for a while, you can miss it.
Oh, I think to myself that it's odd to me that I've been out of college twice as long as I was even in college, which is bizarre, but.
Right, but, you know, 32 is a no 24.
That's exactly. When does it stop for you? I mean, at what point do you, I don't want to say stop, because I don't think you have that ability to just completely, you know, period, full stop. But when does it slow down where maybe you don't run off to go see a practice in Virginia in the middle of the summer or, you know, hit the phones every single, you know, all that sort of stuff? When do you see that slowing down? Is there a point where, because like you said, you know, it is, you don't, you shouldn't be comfortable. And I agree with that. And no one ever likes to see the person, you know, that is doing really well, but is sort of mailing it in. But on the other hand, you can also admit that you are doing really well and you have reached a certain level of success, not necessarily.
Yeah, I'm not made that way. It goes back, we always use references of our history, whether it's in film or whether it's in actual real life events, Sylvester Stallone was such a prominent figure in the Rocky series for so many reasons, but I think everybody will really, really, take notice of the way he was in the first hour of Rocky III after he won the title for the first time. And, he got comfortable, he got more vain, he got, kind of at peace with where he was, and, he stopped attacking. And, I think if you're trying all of a sudden to defend what you've already kind of accomplished, then you're not attacking anymore. And that's not going to be me, and I'm not going to allow it to be me. And, that kind of, span of events during the first hour of that film, I think, kind of illustrates what it's going to be like, if you ever let your guard down. And that's why, I've told people this all the time, like, I'm not really somebody who believes in vacation. I'm not somebody who wants to go to a destination island and not have cell service and shut my phone off. To me, that's not the idea of a good time. To me, that's, something that I can't really do to just shut down. I'm not made that way.
What is the favorite Rocky? Do you have one?
To me, they're all kind of one movie.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Two, three, and four, I think, are all, exceptionally strong from an entertainment perspective. Didn't love Rocky Balboa, but, it's on, you're not going to change the channel.
Yeah.
The ending of Rocky V, I think, is a little bit underrated. Everything other than that, you could probably take or leave. And I was very, happy with the way Creed went. So, it's kind of etched right now into who I am. I mean, you have certain movies that say I have a top five that, stand out from the rest, but that series is definitely in the top five amongst others.
You are listed as, and you are, a insider of college basketball. What exactly makes the difference between, let's say, an insider and just a regular old reporter?
Well, I think, people who report are mostly assigned to a team and so on and so forth, and, or an analyst in studio, whether it's a former player or a former coach or somebody who obviously played or coached the game. I think an insider is somebody who can give you a perspective from how it's going to affect college basketball in different angles. An insider is somebody who can take you from a perspective that, knows the ins and outs of a program and has spent time talking or texting or spending time for, several occasions with head coaches and people in those programs so they can bring you the identities of, those schools, the identities of those players, and people who are more immersed just in the craft 365 days a year, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
So let's talk about that a little bit. You have mentioned getting a call from Tom Izzo, let's say, or chatting with Bo Ryan. These are obviously very big names in the college basketball landscape. How does John Rothstein go about building up, and you mentioned your Rolodex, how do you go about doing that? How does that happen? I mean, obviously, it doesn't just go from one day you're doing updates to the next day you're taking calls from Tom Izzo. How does one go about building up a Rolodex like that?
Well, I think, you have to start to get some credibility and get some respect in the forums that you have. So, obviously getting the opportunity at MSG Network in 2007 was a huge breakthrough because it gave you credibility in the Northeast. So, from there, I tried to be in a situation where I could, really build, strong brands, build strong relationships with people in the Northeast. So I made sure that I went to every basketball dinner or basketball AAU tournament where all these coaches were recruiting, and I had business cards, and I told them, what I was doing, and I introduced myself. And honestly, one of the decisions that I made in my 20s, this is probably part of the reason why I don't believe in vacation, is, when you're allocating money for certain things in your own budget, I decided, since I'm obviously in life going to have to bet on myself, that it was much more important for me long-term to be allocating money to go travel on my own to different AAU tournaments where I had friends in the grassroots community who could put me in touch with coaches, or go over to different cities, whether it was Philadelphia or Boston or Washington, and find a way to spend time with these coaches, find a way to get, obviously get into their practices. So when I requested an interview when I was doing stuff at MSG, it was easier to get into the door. And then, when you get into the opportunity at CBS and your visibility increases, your credibility increases, it's easier to be in a situation to obviously build those relationships. I remember, I think it was 2011, a friend of mine from college was getting married, you know, to a girl from Northern California. And I was I attend the Dick Vitale Gala in Sarasota every May. It's a tremendous, you know, event, you know, to benefit cancer research. And I had a couple of days, and I said, do I want to fly back to New York? And I had, you know, the numbers of a couple of people from different staffs in the Bay Area, and I decided to fly to San Francisco 3 days earlier. And one day, I drove from San Francisco to Palo Alto. I spent time with the Stanford staff. One day, I went to Berkeley. I spent time with the Cal staff. And then one day, I went to St. Mary's, you know, to, you know, spend time with Randy Bennett at St. Mary's. So, you know, that was supposed to be, you know, a trip to, you know, go to a friend's wedding where I went to college with, and it turned out to be an unbelievable networking opportunity in Northern California. And then since then, I kind of had contacts within those three programs. So you need to do opportunities like that, you know, when you have the opportunity. And, you know, it's just kind of become, you know, that type of a thought process, you know, moving forward in terms of being able to have relationships and being able to build trustworthy relationships in as many programs across the country as you can.
A lot of what you're talking about seems to me like building relationships. And that, I think, is something I picked up from when I've been talking to people, and also something I sort of knew anyway. But a lot of this is building relationships. How do you go about when you're on those three trips in the Bay Area, how do you go about making sure that you are treating these people as if you're just building a relationship and not working them for a story or an angle every time? How do you balance that?
Well, I don't want to be doing this for a story. I want to do this for the next 45 years, God willing. So I make sure any time that I'm going to be in a scenario when I'm going to a campus that I'm in a suit and tie and that my shoes are shined and that I'm conducting myself, you know, in the most professional manner because I'm representing CBS Sports. So that's always the first priority. You know, you have to look, obviously, like, you know, you're in a situation that, you know, you're ready to be a professional representative of the company that you work for. And also, you know, you can't just always make it about getting a story because, you know, then you're not being genuine and then that you're going to be transparent. So it's about right now having a relationship and having the ability to, you know, again, rely on this person if you need them. And if not, just, you know that, you know, they know who you are and you know who they are. And sometimes that's all you're going to get out of it. But I think, you know, you want an opportunity to put your best foot forward as often as you can. And again, it goes back to controlling what you can control. Make the best impression you can, be as professional as you can, and don't go into that situation simply looking to get something out of it for your benefit, because a lot of people in life need to understand the benefit of reciprocation.
I don't think people are fully appreciative of how simple it is in that. A lot of it is, like you said, just being a listener, you know, being a person that doesn't always, you know, you're not always going in there saying, you know, how many minutes is this guy going to play a game? You know, what sort of offense are you going to run? You know, if you like to talk about, I know you like to talk about, you know, some, you're a big fan of, you're a good eater. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
What, you know, you're talking to some guy about maybe where he likes to eat in the Bay Area, or simple stuff like, hey, you know, did you see that new Rocky movie, you know, whatever. The point is that it's not, that part of it isn't quite as mysterious and cloak and dagger as people think it is. You know, it's about being a good listener, being a human being, you know, just talking.
Well, you know, and I'm sure you find this too when you socialize with people. Like, how often do you socialize with somebody and, you know, they just go on and on about what they're doing and they don't really reciprocate on everything that's going on, anything that's going on in your life? And I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten more used to it. But I try now just to, like, not even elaborate on what I'm doing and just try to be a better listener, because really, in the long term, that you're going to be better off for that if you can develop your listening skills than if you're going to be somebody who's constantly talking about, you know, what's going on in your life. That's not a healthy thing either. You know, regardless of how difficult it is versus other vocations to make it in something like the media, you know, there are still people out there, you know, and a lot of people out there who have no idea, you know, what it is to be in this business day to day. So you have to respect that, and you have to hear about and listen about what's going on in their lives as well.
I've asked this question to a lot of the people I've had on thus far. For younger people that are looking to get into the industry right out of college, how important is it, do you think, to just... Let me rephrase. Would you think it's more important for them to take the producing job at a bigger station or to take the on-air job at a smaller station if they want to be on the air somewhere?
No, if you want to be on the air, you got to be on the air. If you want to be on the air, you got to be on the air. And that's just something that, you know, my first boss Mike Thompson told me, who's, you know, who was at ESPN Radio, and, you know, people have always said, you know, if you want to be in that type of a situation, you have to do that, you know, as much as possible. And that's the best way you're going to, you know, get, you know, put yourself in that situation. And it relates to a higher level, you know, when you get in the to other situations. Like, if somebody wants to do sidelines, they got to do sidelines. That's how you develop your interviewing skills. If you want to do long-form interviews on TV, you've got to do more long-form interviews on TV. That's the way it works.
You've obviously interviewed a lot of big names. Has there ever been anybody, or actually worked with a lot of big names as well? I mean, you've been on with Francesa a number of times, obviously, all the time. Has there been anybody that's sort of geeked you out from a fan perspective? Just like, oh, wow, I'm doing this now.
Not as much anymore. Not as much anymore. You know, I'm not going to lie, probably 5 years ago, I did a 30-minute interview on television with Bob Knight, and he's a larger-than-life figure, so that was a little interesting, and he keeps you on your toes. But, you know, again, like I said, like, it's all about how you prepare. The pressure's on us to prepare, not on us to perform. And if you're prepared right now, every single day, you know, you're more times often than not, you're going to put your best foot forward. So I'm, you know, always focusing on the preparation and what it's going to take to get better every single day. And if you do that, you know, you're going to be fine more often than not. And you also have to understand that you're human. And again, if you go on the air 25 times, if 24, you're flawless, and 25, you know, you might have misspoke once. It's okay. You know, it's tough to say that if you're a perfectionist, which I am, but you have to understand that everybody goes through that one way or another.
A logistical question as we wrap up here. You're obviously an AP voter. Just for people, because I don't think that is really, there's not a lot of, people don't talk about that often. How does that work? Is that submitted through the internet? Do you gain access to that? And then do you have to submit it at what time? You know, talk me through the logistics of how being an AP voter works.
Well, every Sunday during the basketball season, you know, I submit my top 25 to the AP, and, you know, I have a vote in that, and I vote for National Coach of the Year, National Player of the Year. So, you know, it took some time, obviously, to get that, you know, honor. But I'm very blessed that I'm a part of the AP, and I can vote, you know, each and every week, and it's something I'm obviously very excited about.
All right, so as we wrap up, John, and I appreciate you taking the time, one of my favorite things to do on this podcast, outside of hear everyone else's stories, is turn it around to you, because I always find it interesting when you go on a job interview, after you've been intently answering questions and listening to them, they say to you, all right, now it's your turn. Do you have any questions for me? So I will turn it over. If you have any questions for me, I would gladly take one.
What was your favorite Rocky?
Oh, easy. 4. I cannot, but more from an ironic joke standpoint, I think the counter scenes where they have Drago and Rocky training, Drago literally being shot with steroids as he runs up a 90-degree plane on a treadmill while Rocky is just lifting human beings and heavy rocks was one of my favorite scenes in that, in all of those movies, and maybe in non-intentional humor like ever. It's one of the funniest non-funny scenes I've ever seen.
All right, well, if Rocky is for each of us is one of our top 5 favorite movies as a series, what are your other 4?
As a series or just general?
Well, it could be series or general, you know.
I'll name 4. Okay, so my quick 4 in no particular order. I was a huge Jim Carrey guy. I mean, before he sort of started doing serious movies and or Truman Show type movies. So Ace Ventura's on there for me. Goodfellas is on there for me. And then I'm also obsessed with Ed Burns. I don't know how much you know about Ed Burns. He was the other guy in 27 Dresses. He was the boss. But his movie She's the One is probably one of my favorites. So those 3... And then a 4th one would have to be Back to the Future. Back to Future 2, I should say, is actually my favorite. So Back to the Future,
right.
Ace Ventura, Great Goodfellas.
Fourth Almanac.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I that's really what I take from that movie, just that I wish I could go in time and bet on the Cubs to win the World Series.
Good deal, man.
How about you?
A Few Good Men.
Oh,
Wall
man.
Street.
Man.
Yeah, A Few Good Men, Wall Street. I'll put The Godfather, you know, 1 and 2 in there as well. I don't think a 5th right now jumps out right away. I would say those 4 are all kind of a cut above the rest right now.
All right, well, listen, we'll do another one. We'll tape another one when you think of a 5th. John, thanks so much, man, for taking the time for me. I appreciate it.
God, thanks for having me, man.
All right, everyone, that was John Rothstein. Like I said, not a guy that's going to be easily outworked. You can find him on Twitter, at John Rothstein, and you know where to find me, at Spinelli underscore Scott. Always appreciate all the reviews you're leaving on iTunes. Continue to do that. Subscribe to the podcast. I'm sure I'm overthinking this. And we will catch you next week.